This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the SI Boxing Podcast. A lot to get into this week, and we are recording from Las Vegas, the site of Canelo Alvarez, Sergey Kovalev, one of the biggest fights of the year. We're going to talk a lot about that in this podcast. Joining me first, Kevin Ioli, senior boxing writer at Yahoo Sports, and Sergio Mora, my broadcast partner with DAZN and the former junior middleweight title holder. We'll look back for a minute on what we saw with Josh Taylor against Regis Prograde. That was over in the UK. Great fight this past weekend. Then we'll look ahead to Canelo, Kovalev. I want to look at the judging. I want to look at the referee. There's a lot to dive into with Kevin and with Sergio. A little bit later on, Ryan Garcia, one of the most popular young fighters in all of boxing. He is starting to make his name as a really good fighter in boxing as well. He'll join me to talk about everything going on in his career. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. All right, Kevin Ioli is in, senior writer over at Yahoo Sports, joined by my broadcast colleague, the nine-loss former junior middleweight champion, the Latin Snake.
You are cold, Mannix.
I hope you know that the only reason I'm doing this podcast is because the great Kevin Ioli is here. But I'm tired of you. I'm tired of your face. And I'm tired of your put-downs.
Put-downs? I'm tired of you taking out your Invisalign in front of me. That's what I'm tired of, okay? I'm just trying to get some traction here. Trying to get a little...
Let's talk boxing. We got greatness in our presence. Can we talk boxing,
yes,
please?
We can talk, Kevin. We can talk boxing. All right. Lot to get into, fellas. We are here on radio / podcast row. As times they have changed for Kovalev against Canelo, light heavyweight championship of the world. That's Saturday live on DAZN. Canelo moving up effectively two weight classes to take on Sergey Kovalev. So we're going to get into that. But before we do, I want to look back a little bit, Kevin, to what we saw last week, the title unification fight with Regis Prograde against Josh Taylor. I thought it lived up to expectations.
Yes, it did.
I thought it was a high-level fight. Didn't have a knockout, but you had two guys kind of warring with each other. Taylor's face was busted up at the end, but he came away with the win. Just your takeaways from that fight.
I love the fight. I thought both guys fought tremendously. I thought Taylor showed more versatility than I thought he really had in his game. I had it 115-113 for Taylor. I gave the last two rounds to Prograde, and I was very shocked at two of the judges. In fact, the one judge who had it 115-113, he gave the 12th round to Taylor, and that meant it wasn't a draw. Now, Taylor would have still won the fight anyways, because under the World Boxing Super Series rules, they would have gone to a fourth judge who had Taylor win in the fight. But I just thought that was a mistake there. I thought Prograde fought a really good fight, but I thought Taylor fought an outstanding fight. And the fact is, Prograde got in the pocket, and he was working the body really hard. And I thought Taylor went up and down a lot. He went to the body, came up to the head, he threw those hooks. I thought he mixed his game up, and he, to me, even though I had a lot of respect for him going in, his stock went way up in my mind.
Sergio, when you're watching a fight like that, I mean, what are you looking for, and what did you see?
I seen amazing body work by Prograde. I think his strategy was great. He wasn't able to hurt Taylor to the body, but he was almost there. The body shots were impressive. From the first round, I think the first three rounds, he landed some really, really good body shots, and I tweeted, Prograde is investing in the body because he's going to want to try to, you know, stop Taylor late. But I think Taylor dogged him. He was able to fight, box, and control the action and control the pressure from Prograde. It's not that Prograde didn't fight his fight. It was a damn good fight. If you probably count the clean shots, Prograde landed cleaner shots. But every time Taylor would get absorb that punishment, he would come back with more punches that you could see cleanly. And he was just a better, more effective boxer puncher instead of just the pressure fighter and the inside fighting, where judges sometimes don't see that inside work that Prograde was doing. But it was just a really, really damn good boxing exhibition by both fighters, but especially Taylor.
Yeah, Sergio, I know coming in that
you know, we say no losers in a fight like this. There really wasn't a loser. I mean, Prograde, does his stock doesn't fall. He'll be able to bounce back and probably get a rematch with Taylor at some point down the line. Taylor, of course, now we hope goes off and fights a 140-pound unification fight against Jose Ramirez. You, part of the broadcast team for Ramirez versus Hooker, you saw the best of him in that fight. You just watched what Taylor did. Like, size up that matchup for me. Like, is that – do you see that, some one of those two guys, because of styles, having an edge one way or the other?
Oh, definitely. No. I think if Taylor and Ramirez fight, that's going to be – that's going to be what Maurice Hooker could have done if it would have gone into the later rounds. I was so curious about the Hooker-Ramirez fight because it started off, they were blasting away, right? But I would love to have seen what it would look like the second half of the fight. I think Taylor would go into the second half of the fight, and just like he did against Prograde, he knows how to handle the power and the pressure of power-pressure fighters. So it's a second-half fight. Taylor has all the goods to win rounds. That's a pound for pound matchup, and I would love to see it.
All right, Kevin, in the politics of it, you've got two guys on different sides of the streets, of course. Taylor, I guess, promoted by Cyclone, but I have a feeling Eddie's going to wind his way in there in working with him. You have Ramirez over on the ESPN Top Rank side. I mean, is that a complicated fight to make in your mind to get that unification fight? Because I know there's mandatories that Ramirez is going to go through. Taylor might decide to do the same, but middle to late next year, I mean, that fight needs to happen. Do you think it will happen?
I do think it's going to happen. I talked to Todd DeBuff about it, and he's definitely interested in having the fight be made. And I think Eddie's the kind of guy that has shown he'll work with other people. I think that's a fight that they can make, and I think the fighters themselves are going to say that they want that fight. That would be a hell of a fight. I really think it's a 50-50 fight, and that tells you how far that Jose Ramirez has grown, in my opinion, because if you would have said 2 years ago that Jose Ramirez would be fighting the elite guys in the world, and it's a 50-50 fight, people would have laughed at you. But right now, Ramirez, I have him number 10 on my pound for pound list. I think he's really come a long way from the Olympics. He was kind of a protected fighter as he came out, but this kid really wants it, and I think going to Robert Garcia has taken him to another level. You know, I think with Freddie Roach, he kind of got lost in the sauce. You know, Freddie is the best trainer of our era, one of the best of all time. But I think, you know, Freddie didn't have enough time to devote to him. And Ramirez, since he got with Robert Garcia, and he has that sparring at the Garcia Boxing Academy in Oxnard, every day he's in there with the elite fighters, whether it's Mikey Garcia or whoever else is in there. And I think that's made a huge difference, and we see that in his game.
Yeah, and let me ask you, too, then, where that fight lands will be interesting to me, because that's a pretty expensive fight. You know, it's not a fight that's going to do well on pay-per-view. So I think you have to do it on some kind of linear-type platform. I don't know that Top Rank and ESPN want to afford that. I think they can afford whatever they want if they wanted to,
right.
But I don't think that's going to be something in their budget. I'd like to see. Let me run this theory by you, because Top Rank and Eddie have worked together in the past, certainly. Ramirez, Hooker, great example of that. If I'm them, I do Ramirez against Taylor on DAZN somewhere in the United States, maybe even in Fresno, where Ramirez is huge. And the winner of that fights Crawford on pay-per-view on ESPN, because that'll be undisputed against former undisputed. We know how tough it's been for Top Rank to get fights, and that way both sides would potentially win. Top Rank wouldn't have to pay for a fight like that, and Crawford, no matter what happens, Crawford would get a high-level opponent.
I hadn't thought of that theory, but I like that, Chris, because I think you have to somehow work together to make the big fights. And if you're going to sit there and say your plan would not be to get one big fight, but to get two big fights that people are going to be compelled with, I think you do that. I was going to say, I think Ramirez and Taylor would be great in Las Vegas as a DAZN show, right? Put it in Las Vegas and have it.
I've been several.
I think you could go. I mean, hey, look, if you think about that fight, you get a lot of people travel from the UK to come over here for that. You really stack the card with a lot of good British fighters. You're going to get a lot of people coming. Ramirez's people travel very, very well. Rick Merigian's the best in the business about getting people to turn out. And I think that you would have a sold-out event here. You would have closed circuit going. I think that would really be a big thing for boxing that would be good. So that would be what I would like. But your plan does make a lot of sense, because Terrence Crawford's going to sit there, and Al Haymon's going to slow walk that. If he's going to ever have Errol Spence and let's hope he fights again. But if he's ever going to have Errol Spence fight Terrence Crawford, it's not going to be in the next couple of fights. And so you're going to see Crawford just sitting there fighting guys like Cavalauskas that nobody really is interested in fighting. You know, nobody was interested in seeing him fight Amir Khan. I like your plan quite a bit because it creates two big fights for us. But I think a Las Vegas Ramirez versus Taylor fight would be big as well.
And everybody gets paid off it. Sergio, let me ask you this. For Progre, you know, it's a loss, and he's got to take a bit of a step back, but not too far back, I don't think. And one thing for Progre I'd love to see, if he decides to continue a relationship with DAZN, and who knows which way he's going to go, but how about Mo Hooker? Like, you know, maybe you give Progre like a one kind of bounce back fight, but I don't know that I want to see Progre continue to fight two or three sort of lower level fights. Same thing with Hooker. Like, give him one bounce back fight. He says he's going to stay at 140, change trainers, you know, went to work with BOMAC in the Crawford gym. I'm interested in Hooker.
No, we're going to see Progre on DAZN. I think Lou DiBella, his promoter, likes working with DAZN. I think we're going to see a Hooker Progre type.
I think he likes the checks that come with working with
DAZN. I was
going to
say that too, but yes.
Okay, I'm just jumping your play.
I don't get paid as much as you, Mr. Mannix, but okay.
I know your agent.
Our agent. But no, I think that's a type of fight. Hooker and Progre makes total sense. I think they both would want it. They both had a really good loss against the best. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that Progre showed his character in that fighter interview afterwards. He says, "Man, I lost. It's all right." You know, he didn't say, "I got robbed. It should have went my way." He has the judges on his side in the UK. He goes, "No, I lost. It's okay. I'm going to move on." It's a classy, classy answer by him, and it shows you the type of character he has. And I follow him on Twitter. You know, he's a family man. He has his head on right. He's a hell of a trainer, a fighter. He's a trainer. He trains well. He's like a modern-day Duran with discipline. You know, I really enjoy Progre.
You were just throwing compliments out there. Modern day. Now you're like Bernie Barmacel.
I was just going to say that.
You're like Bernie hanging out the – yeah, Dale. Then Bernie, job well done.
Bernie.
Yeah, right.
But I think when you look at Progre, I mean, I think he's going to get bigger rather than smaller. And it reminded me of Sugar Ray Leonard against Roberto Duran 1. Leonard fought Duran's fight. He lost, but he became bigger, and he went into, then he fought Duran again, then he fought Thomas Hearns, and he became the legend that he is. I like a fight, Hooker and Progre. You know, the one thing that I thought Taylor's style caused trouble was, you know, he had the long arms, and he had that, and I thought that he was able to use that, and that would be an issue with a Mo Hooker fight, don't you think? I mean, Mo Hooker's got the reach of a light heavyweight, basically.
But you got to learn, don't you? I mean, like, if he's eventually going to go to 147, those guys are going to be bigger,
yeah,
they're longer. It's like,
I love the fight. I mean, that was a fight I was going to mention as a comeback fight for him. I think that would be a tremendous fight. But I think that, you know, I'm just speculating what it would look like. And I think Mo Hooker has the kind of style to cause trouble for him that we saw in the fight in England.
All right, let's move on to the fight we're going to see on Saturday here in Las Vegas. Canelo Alvarez jumping up a couple of weight classes to take on Sergey Kovalev. It's a great fight. And it's frankly, Kevin, I don't want to overhype it because I think that, you know, we all kind of believe, or most of us believe, you know, Canelo body work, that would be the big factor there. But I'll say this, I'm more interested in this fight than I would have been a third Golovkin fight. I think I know how the Golovkin fight ends with a higher degree of certainty than I know how this fight ends.
I love this fight, and you know, I criticize Canelo a lot in 2017 when they were slow walking the first Golovkin fight. But I don't do that now because I think he went out there and he said, how do I make history and how do I take on a tough challenge? And he finds a guy that is still a good fighter. You know, is Kovalev the best that he was in his career? No, he's not at his best point, but he came off a very impressive win over Anthony Yard and a gut check win because he was almost stopped in that fight and he managed to gather himself and come back and win it. He showed a lot of heart. And now he takes this fight 2 months later. He didn't have time to go on vacation, let his body heal. He said, I'm going right back in the gym, and I'm going to do it. Buddy McGirt's made a big difference with him. And if you look at Kovalev, you know, in his early part of his career, you know, he used that jab a lot. You know, he fell in love, I think, with his right hand and his punching power. He became the crusher, and he even talked about that the other day with us at the session. You know, I fell in love with my power, and I lost my ability to box. I think he's going to have to box against Canelo. I think he's going to have to try to keep Canelo at the end of his jab, but I think he has the capability of doing that. And anytime you have a guy that can give a superstar trouble and you can make a case for him winning, it's a compelling fight. Canelo's a superstar. Most of the fights he goes into, Danny Jacobs, everybody was picking him to win. Even in this fight, the MGM has the odds as 5-1. Canelo's minus 500. So you want to win $100 on Canelo, you have to bet 500. That's telling you that they think Canelo Alvarez is a very strong favorite to win this fight. But I think that while I do think Canelo wins it, I think that number is a little bit high. I might even take a shot on Kovalev just for the say, hey, you know what, it's worth it on the plus money because I'm getting a guy that has knockout power. Canelo's chin is legendarily strong, but we don't know how he's going to take it at 175 against a guy that was good enough to knock Andre Ward. You knock the great Andre Ward down in the first round, not when Andre Ward was depleted. You can punch. So we don't know how Canelo's going to go. So I love the fight, I think, and more credit to him. I wrote a column today, and I said, you, this guy is one of the 100 greatest fighters of all time, and he's not getting credit for that. And this is a reason why he takes on these kind of challenges.
And Sergio,
I want to touch on that. Great, that's a great point because Kovalev is a natural 175 pounder.
We're not allowed to interrupt me on this podcast.
Canelo started his career at 140. So yeah, even though he has filled out,
was he
nicely,
that low? 140.
His pro debut was at 139.5, and he's moving up to 175. Andre Ward, Kevin just touched on, he fought in the Olympics as a light heavyweight, so he's already a big guy, even though he moved down as a professional super middleweight. That's going to be a big point. I think, personally, Kovalev, the way he wins is the decision. I know it sounds like it can't happen, but the only way I see Kovalev winning is putting rounds in the bank early in the first half. We know that he struggles in the second half. That's when he starts cruising behind the jab, starting to stay in the middle of the ring and box, and then hopefully get a decision. That's the way I see Kovalev winning.
Sergio, one of the things that resonates with me and has resonated with me is a conversation that I've had with Ray Leonard, and I think you've had a similar conversation about his experience with Donnie Lalonde. And, you know, people remember this, late 1980s, Ray was the middleweight champion, Lalonde light heavyweight. They met in the middle at 168, and Ray told me he got in the ring with him, he knew he was the better fighter than him, but that first punch Donnie hit him with, he goes, oh, fuck, it's going to be a long night.
Sugar Ray Leonard told me a story about having a dream, a premonition before the night of that fight that he was going to get dropped. And then when he got dropped, he said, okay, that happened, it's out of the way. It's time to shine now. But he said he had a dream the night before that he was going to get dropped.
But the point is, like, there's going to come a time, maybe it's early, when Canelo's hit with something. And, look, I think Canelo's got a great chin. He's shown it in his last few fights. He went 24 rounds with Golovkin. The last 12, he stood there and took his best jab and best power shots from a big puncher at 160. But this is still a heavy hitter at 175 pounds. And I'm fascinated to see because Canelo's got to get on the inside.
And that's
like he
the
can't
reason,
jab his way to
and
win.
And that's the reason this fight shouldn't be a 5-1. I agree with Kevin. It shouldn't be a 5-1. Canelo shouldn't be 5-1 favorite. 3-1 at max. I just think Kovalev has the power, the experience. He has a great trainer in his corner. I think Buddy McGregor was a great addition this part of his career.
Oh, wait.
I'm not a fan of switching trainers.
Yeah, we know that
but
this podcast.
You're
very anti-loyalty, right? Loyalty.
I'm a fan of punchers that just punchers changing trainers late in their career because they already got knocked out. That invincibility, that aura invincibility is gone. You're going to have to learn to box behind a jab, and Buddy McGirt brings that to the table.
Right,
did it with Fernando Vargas, did it with Arturo Gatti, now he's going to do it with Kovalev.
Oscar, well, so lighter punchers can't change trainers?
No.
Okay.
No, because power is not their problem. Ring generalship, defense is not their problem. Getting in shape is not their problem. Mentally, that's their problem. Now, when it comes to punchers, they need to add other things to their
So you keeping the same trainer forever was fine because you weren't a huge hitter.
Loyalty.
This is
loyalty,
like,
baby.
You can't cash a loyalty check.
Hey,
Sergio.
By the way, Kevin, real quick, to all the listeners, Mannix listeners, I told them that I was going to beat Mr. Boston College in chess, and I whooped his ass.
You're just bouncing all over the place, Kevin. Let's dig into some of the minutia of this fight. People hate to hear that. Could be an impact with judging, could be an impact with the referee. And Sergio, I want to get your take on this as well. But let's start with the judging selections. My opinion, Julie Letterman, excellent judge.
One
I'm
of the
a
best.
Fan of Julie Letterman. Dave Moretti, a
Hall of Famer,
Vegas staple, at a lot of these big fights. My Adelaide Bird alarm went off when I saw Don Trella on that as that third judge. And Don's a good judge with a good history. But I remember, you were ringside too, that first Golovkin fight. Don Trella had a bad scorecard. Round seven, a clear round for Gennady Golovkin. He scored it for Canelo Alvarez.
His best round of the fight he gave to Canelo Alvarez. If he scores that fight for Gennady Golovkin, or that round for Gennady Golovkin, Golovkin wins the fight. And we're probably talking today about the rubber match happening right now, as opposed to sitting here talking about Sergey Kovalev. And to me, that was an unforgivable error. Just an absolutely unforgivable error. That is the round that you're paid to get correct. And a clear round, it should be a no-brainer. And he had a brain fart, and he didn't get it correct. Canelo has that aura in Vegas. Can you beat Canelo in Vegas? And I think that it wears on fighters, wears on his opponents. You know, you think of when he fought Arislandi Lara. A lot of people thought Arislandi Lara beat Canelo, and Canelo got that decision from the judges in Las Vegas. I really believe that Don Trella is going to be a factor in this fight one way or another. And that's sad to say. You never want to think the referee or the judges are going to have a bearing on the outcome, but it would not shock me at all if we see a crazy score.
Should we take advantage of being on Press Row and ask someone that knows about this? Hey, Agus, go over here for a second, would you? Quick question for you. For the live pod, we're discussing the judging in this fight. Any issue you have with Don Trella as a third judge, someone who gave Canelo a very favorable scorecard in that first Golovkin fight?
Listen, you can't choose judges. Commission send your judges, and you can't choose it. So what can they do about it if they picked up these judges?
Are you comfortable with it?
No, what, you gonna change it if I'm not?
I could throw a fit, maybe. I don't know. So get angry at a press conference.
So what? And then gonna get the worse in the fight.
We just saw you standing there. We wanted to find out what was going on there.
Did you
like my answer?
I loved
you, Higgins. It's a manly answer. That's what a real man would say. What can you do about it?
In Boston,
it's different. It's like, well, we got to complain and find a way to win. No, we don't cheat. We deal with what we have.
To find a way to win. How many super? Okay, I'm not going down the Boston rabbit hole with you. But to that point, Kevin, you've covered boxing for a very long time. What kind of influence? Agus says I can't do anything about it.
He could have done something
about it. I agree. And yes. I don't want to put him on the spot right there as he's kind of blindsided. He's walking around with another one of his fighters. But you can do stuff about that.
Yeah. I mean, for people who don't know, the way it works in Nevada is they put out a list of judges that they're going to pick. They say these 12 judges, these four referees are the ones that we are considering for the fight. If you have a legitimate objection to one of the judges, let us know and we will consider that. So I think that they could say, hey, look, we are not comfortable with Don Trella because of one thing. We think he's a good judge. We don't think he's a cheater. But we see that scorecard that he made, and subconsciously we think he might be favoring Canelo Alvarez. And you put up a fuss. They have enough people that they can take from then that they would take Don Trella and say, okay, we'll give you that one, and we're not going to go there. I don't think Canelo was worrying about it. Agus had that opportunity to do that, and if he didn't pull it off, he made a mistake. I think you have to give your fighter the best chance to win that you can, and the best chance he has to win is by having three judges that he knows is going to call it as they see it, not call it for the house fighter or call it if the Mexican crowd is cheering for Canelo.
And Kevin, let's be clear. We're recording this on Thursday afternoon. I'm not sure there still isn't something you could do. Like, you've got Steve Weisfeld on the undercard. Steve Weisfeld, I think we all would agree, best judge.
It's too late. They're not going to change it now. Cannot do it.
Okay, all right. Well, I'd still go nuts at the weigh-in or something. I don't know. I'd still throw a hissy fit.
I think, you know, you did a good thing before the first Golovkin fight. You wrote the story about Adelaide Byrd. You talked about that, and you went out there. And I think that brought a lot of attention to it. And I think that's made everybody stay on their P's and Q's. And I think, to a large degree, what you did was responsible for Adelaide's suspension. Do you think if you hadn't raised a fuss before that fight about her being assigned to call that show, that Bob Bennett would have suspended her like he did? I do not think he would have done that. But I think the fact that you raised the alarm before the fight, and then everybody saw what happened, and she had Canelo winning 10-2. If you would have said Canelo won that 7-5, I still would have disagreed with that. But I would have said, okay, 7-5, it's a close fight, close rounds. You might have saw it differently than me. But to then turn around and say, I had a 10-2 for Canelo, That's ridiculous. And one, although we should point out, one of the rounds she gave to Kanady was the seventh. Mm-hmm. So that even Don Trella wasn't with, even Adelaide didn't miss that one.
Did that the one of the rounds, Adelaide? Sergio, let me pivot it to the referee, and I want to get your take as a former fighter. You got Russell Mora as the third man in, and Russell Mora is a fine referee. I think one of the reasons he was chosen is that he doesn't have a deep history with Canelo. He has not judged or refereed a Canelo fight in Nevada. I think his last one was 2009 in Mexico. What do you know about Russell Mora? And talk to me about the importance of, like, who is refereeing your signature fights.
Well, I know that Russell has a great last name in Mora,
that joke like three times.
He doesn't have experience in the magnitude of this type of fight. He's done smaller fights. He's an experienced referee. I respect him, but I don't know how he's going to react with the big fight, the mega fight like this. So you want him to do well. I just don't understand. I don't understand why he got chosen. I would have chosen someone that's already been here before. One of my favorites in this magnitude of fight is Jack Reese, and I told you my praise for Jack Reese. I think he's the absolute best in the business.
Well, he had a signature moment in that Wilder Fury fight.
A lot of referees probably would have stopped that just by the way that Fury was laying on his back, but he didn't, and that's why that fight continued. It was a great fight. So referees can have a big impact. I'm hoping Mora does well. I just don't understand why he got the opportunity. But just like Trella, this is Vegas. I mean, it wouldn't be a Las Vegas fight weekend without some kind of controversy. So
that's just sad indictment then of like where we are.
It's boxing. Of course it's sad. Of course it's dark.
It shouldn't be. There should be the best referee in the country. I say, how about this? Take Steve Smolger off our broadcast and stick him back in there. Steve.
I love that idea.
You know, the one thing that, you know, to give Agus a break that we didn't talk about is he did not want Tony Weeks referee in this fight because of the way Tony Weeks handled Andre Ward fight, the second Andre Ward fight. So he shot a shot.
Which was not good.
Like, right, of course. So he shot a shot on that one and said, I don't want him as the referee. So now can you go to the well a second time? And I think that might have been one of the issues that he didn't talk about here, the fact that he didn't. Russell, the thing that concerns me about Russell reffing this fight is if it gets rough on the inside. There's been some fights. Joseph Egbeko, it was a fight at the Hard Rock. Who was he fighting in the for the bantamweight title? But Russell let it get out of control. There were low blows. They were wrestling each other. I think it was Abner Morris. And he let that fight get a little bit out of control. And I think Russell's a good referee when he has two guys that'll box and stay away and they're not. But when you have fighters, you know, that are going to get – I think Canelo's going to be trying to get on the inside. I think, hey, look, the way Canelo wins this fight, in my opinion, he's got to get past the jab and he's got to close that distance where he neutralizes Kovalev's power and then he works the body. And if he's in that inner range, you know, they could start wrestling and everything, and that's where the referee is going to come. You want to let them work on the inside appropriately, but you don't want to let them elbow and all that. And that would be my concern. I don't have a tremendous amount of concern about Russell, but if I had a concern, if the fight becomes a tough inside fight, does he break it at the wrong time, or does he let one of the guys get away with something, manhandling the other guy?
I think
that would be my concern.
Let me ask you this, Kevin. I think one of the concerns Kovalev's side has is the early stoppage sort of situation. And I think they looked at the Anthony Yard fight and wondered, would Russell Mora have stopped that in the eighth round? You know, I think the referee in that fight did a good job letting it go. Obviously, it worked out for Kovalev coming back to knock him out. I think that's a factor, too, because one thing about Kovalev, he doesn't respond well when he's hurt. Like, he just doesn't know what he's doing out there. He kind of tends to sort of fight back like a power puncher and a big hitter does. But if Kovalev winds up trapped and he's getting teed off, will Russell step in and pull the trigger on the early one?
I think he will, and I won't criticize him if he does. You know, I think one of the things we have to get by in boxing is we have to get past. I would much rather have that fight stop one punch too early and see Sergey tomorrow or see Canelo tomorrow and say sorry about the way the fight ended, as opposed to have what happened to Pat Day and so many other fighters. And I think, you know, we in the media bear a response. I wrote this in my column that I wrote on Pat Day. We bear a responsibility to this because the public gets ginned up, and that's why I was so critical of Max Kellerman's comments when he used the phrase Vodzik quit against Beterbiev. You know what? Vozick fought his ass off in that fight. And at the end of the ninth round, Max is interpreting Teddy Atlas bear hugging him and saying, come on, and screaming at him as he was pushing him out of the corner. He was trying to motivate him to win a very close fight. He's fighting one of the best punchers in the sport, one of the best fighters in the sport, and he fought his ass off. And to say that that guy quit is a disservice to the fighter. And then you make fans say that, and then that all has a trickle-down effect. And you think referees don't hear that, and they don't want to get booed, and they don't want to get criticized, and so they're we have to be willing to stop the fights. So Russell probably will stop that fight if that happens. But I think we, even though maybe internally we can talk amongst each other later and say, hey, he could have probably let that go, I think in the media we have to make the point that it is fair to stop those fights because we have to do something to prevent those tragedies from occurring.
And people have to look at circumstances, too, with that Vostick fight. I mean, two fights earlier he had nearly killed Adonis Stevenson. There was a 10 count for Patrick Day going at, like, I mean, where he's at mentally in a situation like that, I don't even know, Sergio.
Here's the thing about quit. I think a fighter and the analyst, in the analyst role, he can use the word quit. For instance, I wouldn't have used it in the fight with Vostick, but I would use it with Waters when he fought Vasily Lomachenko. Nicholas Walters. Quit. And we should label him for what it was. It was, he quit that fight. We all know the most famous, No Mas. Roberto Duran quit that fight. There's plenty of times where fighters have quit. They don't want to continue. There's many other ways you can quit without actually quitting as well. I think a fighter, an analyst that used to be a fighter knows that, and he's allowed to say that. But a person like Max Kellerman, a person like Chris Mannix, especially Chris Mannix, shouldn't be able to say the word quit because you don't know what the fighter's going through. But sometimes you are allowed, but try to avoid it.
And thanks for coming, Sergio. Let's bring in Roy Jones here for
you can use the word retired. You could say that he.
I've never said
he didn't get
quit.
Off the stool. He didn't get off his stool. He was forced to resign. He retired. Quit is a strong word.
Max came back and he apologized for saying quit, and he said, "I should have said he had enough." I don't even think that was better than saying he quit, but I don't even think that was the right word because Vozick was fighting at the end. You know what? The referee stopped the fight. He got knocked on the ground by a huge puncher who is now 15 for 15 as a pro and who had knocked him out in the amateurs. In addition to all the stuff you talked about, he knew he was knocked out in the amateurs. So, you know, even saying he had enough, I don't think he had enough. He wanted to continue to fight. If the referee hadn't stopped it after the third knockdown, do we think that Vozick would have walked to his corner and said, I'm done? No, he would have started throwing punches and tried. He was overwhelmed. He was compromised. And
I thought he fought well up until the last couple of rounds. I thought he fought really well. I think I had him up on my scorecard at one point. Like, he was.
But that I had 6-3 I had after nine rounds. But there were a lot of close rounds in the fight. But the thing was, that's what a guy like Beterbiev does. He breaks you down, right? He hits you in the early part of the fight, and your reserves get depleted, and you're fighting your ass off, and you're getting hit by this monster, and round after round after round, and eventually by the 8th, 9th, and 10th round, you're not the same guy, and you don't recover from a big shot like you recovered from it in the second or third round. So that's the way I look at it.
All right, Sergio, let me finish with this. The conventional wisdom of Canelo against Kovalev is that this will end with some kind of body shot on Kovalev. Kovalev does his best to, you know, dissuade people of the notion that he is vulnerable to the body. What do you think of that? Kovalev's been hit to the body a couple of times. He was knocked out by Andre Ward with some questionable body shots, some below the belt shots there. Do you look at him as being vulnerable to the body, and do you think that's something Canelo Alvarez absolutely will capitalize on?
Yes, I think Kovalev is vulnerable to the body. We've already seen that he's vulnerable and hurt to the body. Once you get stopped one time, especially as a monster like Kovalev, then that aura of invincibility is gone. So that's not there anymore. He's not going to have that card to play anymore. Canelo is one of the best body punchers in the business. And if Kovalev is going to be overly worried about the body shots, he's going to open up the head. I want to find out, and I'm going to ask Canelo and Kovalev at the fighter meeting, have they ever sparred before? Because if they sparred before,
they said they have not sparred before.
That was going to be key to why is Canelo taking this big risk? I mean, it's crazy to go up to.
If they had sparred
like
before,
this.
Abel Sanchez would have given us
if,
the tape.
If they had sparred before, then Canelo knew something. He probably heard him in sparring. He probably wasn't as small or at a disadvantage. So now that I know that they didn't spar, this is just a big step up. It's a dangerous step up. But yeah. Canelo's going to be aiming. There's a bullseye at that torso of Kovalev.
Kevin, do you see it? How do you see the body attack as being kind of the deciding factor, as a lot of people sort of believe?
I do think the body is going to be a big factor. I think Canelo is a terrific body puncher. He commits to the body, and Kovalev, I do think, has a weakness there. I think Buddy McGirt might make a little bit of a difference there and work, you know, and change some things in his strategy and the way he fights that try to neutralize that. But at the end of the day, you're fighting an all-timer, in my mind, who is very good to the body and who is going to be committed. And I think the body work is going to be a big difference. That's why I'm going to pick Canelo Alvarez by decision in the fight. It would not shock me if he stopped him. It would not shock me if he stopped him late in the fight with a body shot. I just think that Kovalev is coming in on a high with this trainer. I think he has confidence. He talked to us the other day, Sergio, about the fact that he said, I've never been trained like this since I was an amateur. He even said all John David Jackson did for him was hit mitts. He said, Buddy is actually explaining to him why I'm asking you to do things and technically changing his game. And so I think that will make a difference because even if it's BS, and we think it's BS, he believes it. And if he believes it, that's all that matters. I think Kovalev will be better than he's been, but I still think Canelo's body work will be the difference. I say 115-113 for Canelo.
What is that Don Trellis scorecard look like at the end of a fight like that? We'll all be kind of watching. I don't mean to pile on Don. He's a good judge, but when you have that history, it becomes a variable in all this.
You're gonna, with the internet now and all the scorecards.
I'm gonna tweet it out. There, we're gonna talk about it in the broadcast.
Like, we have the pod index that you can go look at and
love
see
the pod
how he
index.
Scored.
Me and Chris disagree on this. It's Kovalev. A question to you, Kevin. Is Kovalev a Hall of Famer in your book?
I think if he wins this fight, yes. I think if he doesn't win this fight, borderline.
Enough of the Hall. I mean, the Hall of Fame, like, today's era of fight, like, he's not to
who's his best win to this point?
Oh, no, I'm agreeing with you. I think that's, I'm just saying, the Hall, I think it's too much. There's too many Hall of Good fighters out there right now. I mean, how about this, like, hypothetical, not to get too off track because we're wrapping up, but, like, Deontay Wilder's not a Hall of Famer to me. Like, he's just not. Like, he's got one quality win over Luis Ortiz, and Luis Ortiz might be 50. Like, even if he beats Ortiz, again, it's not going to really resonate with me.
Do I have time to go down this rabbit hole? So I'll just say this. What is Mike Tyson's greatest win? Mike Tyson is a deserved Hall of Famer, but not because of any great win he had in the ring. Mike Tyson's a Hall of Famer because of what he meant to boxing and what he did to boxing. Because if you look, all his biggest fights, Lennox Lewis, Evander Holyfield, he lost. He lost those fights. And I think when you look at Deontay Wilder, you have to say, okay, what did he mean to the sport of boxing? He's not a Hall of Famer today. But if he goes out there and he fights Tyson Fury again and he fights Anthony Joshua again, then you say, hey, you know what? He was the guy because he's been calling for these fights and he's been begging people to fight him. And if he gets those fights and he ends up, 45-2 or 45-1, he's a Hall of Famer. But if he didn't fight Luis Ortiz and he retired tomorrow, he said, I'm sick of fighting. A long, hard thought process, but I don't know. He's not as big outside the ring as Mike Tyson was, and it would be a tough one.
Tyson and Gotti, to me, were aberrations, like, right, where it's like you were just so larger than life and did so much for boxing that you deserve to be in.
I agree. Now,
I think maybe Ray Boom Boom Mancini falls in that line also. I mean,
all right, so there's a few of them along those lines. A few of them there. All right, fellas, always appreciate it. Kevin, you and I will be back here, I think, next spring for the biggest event of the first half of the year, Mora Manfredo 3.
The pride of Providence, baby.
3. Amateurs, who won that one, the amateur, Sergio? I did.
I'm 3-0.
Oh.
Amateurs, twice as a pro.
All right, so fourth time's the charm.
The pride of L.A. I should change it to pride of L.A.
Yeah, fourth time's the charm. Fellas, always appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, so think about your favorite pair of raggedy old sweats. You love how comfortable they are to lounge in, but how often can you wear them out of the house? Now, there's a pair of pants that can do both. Introducing the all-day, everyday pant from Public Rec, your new go-to for style, comfort, and versatility. Public Rec's all-day, everyday pants close the gap between a stylish pair and comfortable wear. They have reinvented the classic sweats. They've reinvented the classic sweatpants design, starting from scratch where it matters the most. Custom-made performance, fabric, and tailored fit. Indoor comfort meets outdoor style, the perfect pair for guys on the go. I spend a lot of time around my house just sitting around either watching TV or doing some writing. I wear my pair every chance that I get. They're the first sweats that have waist and inseam sizing, so whether you're short, tall, or somewhere in between, they fit perfectly. The design details like the elastic waistband with internal drawstring, the two deep front zipper pockets, and the faux front fly for a more formal look. These pants are awesome. I'm telling you, I wear them around the house all the time. They have 9 different colors to choose from. I had trouble choosing my favorite. These are the all-day, everyday for a reason. Perfect for any dress code I throw at them. Right now, you can get an exclusive offer for just for our listeners. Go to publicrec.com/allday today and get 10% off your order automatically shipped at checkout. Always with free U.S. shipping and free returns. Don't sleep on this rare opportunity to get a discount. That's publicrec.com/allday for 10% off. And now, on to my conversation with Ryan Garcia. Hi, Ryan Garcia is here, 135-pound lightweight. Big moment for him on Saturday. Romero Duno, co-main event of Canelo and Kovalev. Prospect or contender? Which one do you prefer?
No label.
No label.
It's Ryan Garcia.
Some guys don't. Like, Devin Haney gets a little
I know. He gets mad about that.
A little prickly about that.
I don't take that too serious. I'm just Ryan Garcia.
Risk Ryan Garcia, 135-pounder,
yeah, that's
ready
it.
To go.
Leave it at that. I don't care about none of that.
This fight to me is fascinating because even if there was no backstory, it's a good fight. You know, right. Duno's a guy that brings it. You know, he's definitely a step-up type of guy for you. But the backstory of it has made it even more crazy. To go back to mid-September, you and I had talked when that all went down.
Man,
like, the perception was that Ryan Garcia was ducking Duno. And I said after the fight, after Duno won his fight, I said, the biggest winner in all this is Romero Duno. Like, he has turned into, like, the Muhammad Ali of lightweights in the last, like, 3 weeks because everybody thought Ryan was ducking him.
Yeah, I know. Everybody, they had this thought in their head that, you know, Ryan didn't take the fight because he was scared, you know, Ryan, this. But I knew that if I didn't take it, that's the backlash I would get. But I also knew when everything settled, that would be the next guy I fought, you know, so it wouldn't matter, you know, in the upcoming months. But I'm happy I did make that decision.
Mm-hmm. You made it clear to me at that time. You said it's not about Romero Duno. Just give me the right money. Like, let's make dollars. And that makes sense, of course. But how crazy was that for you to see it all kind of play out on social media, to hear your name and report after report come out and the battle you had with your promoter?
Yeah, it was definitely a big moment because I had a lot of pressure on me. You know, a lot of people were saying a lot of things about me. I had so much negativity on the internet, but I knew if I stand on my ground and I, you know, just stood up for myself, my worth, I knew everything would be all right because, you know, I just trust in God because, you know, when you're not doing something wrong, you shouldn't be scared to stand it up for what's right, you know.
When it all went down, did you think after that, you know, maybe I'm done with Golden Boy, maybe I'm going to go a different path with my career?
A little bit, I'm not going to lie. But I also trusted that, you know, there was a lot of miscommunication and that Oscar, you know, usually would always have my back. So I would think to myself, like, maybe if we sat down and, you know, we finally talked about the issues that are going on, it could be resolved. And luckily it did.
Was it a simple thing for you about, look, show me the money in a new contract? Or did you need to hear stuff from Oscar, maybe from Eric Gomez, from the people in Golden Boy, that assured you that you were a priority for them?
I didn't. Honestly, it wasn't about, you know, hearing it from them, because anybody can say good things, you know, just to, you know, they know what you want to hear. So I don't want to hear that. I just want to see it. You know what I mean?
And seeing is the money.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. You know what I'm talking about. Because, like, you're not going to back up something with words. You're going to back it up with money. Like, when you invest in something, you don't be like, yo, that's a good product. No, you're going to give it, you're going to back it up with some change.
Mm-hmm. So you feel like you're in a good place now with all that? Like, that things were settled for you financially and that the path is pretty strong for you looking moving forward?
Yeah. You know, this whole year after that March 30th fight, I seen a shift that, like, my whole career was all about fixing things that needed to be fixed on the outside, because I know my career couldn't continue if the things weren't right, you know, like, oh, the money, the promotion, the type of, you know, like, focus and attention should be, you know, where it's at for myself. Because, you know, when you have all these, like, followers, people expect, like, okay, well, why isn't Ryan, like, on these cards, or like, what's going on? Like, it's a bad look, so it needed to be fixed.
Mm-hmm. So as you kind of look at this fight, Do you get more excited because of all that's happened? Like, you know, because you're going to get a chance to step in there with a guy that you know personally that you wanted to fight, but so many people thought maybe you didn't want to fight him.
I just, you know, coming to this fight, just like my last fight with Avery, I just wanted to get my respect in some way, you know. If that's, you know, going like a fucking slugfest for 10 rounds and it's a great fight, then so be it. If it's me knocking him out cold in one or two rounds, like I feel like it's going to happen, then if that gets me my respect, that would be good. I just want some type of like, damn, Ryan took a fight that they said they were scared of, and he demolished them, or he, you know, went to war with them, but it was still a great fight. Like, either way, I'm okay.
Was that the stuff that happened with Avery, was that the craziest thing you've ever seen? Like,
that was a movie, man. If they were recording me then, they would be like, what the heck is this? Like, getting arrested, the drama, the Twitter, it's getting reported by every person on Twitter. And I'm like, oh my God, this is crazy.
Well, it was like the feds are looking for Ryan Garcia's opponent. I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, like, well, I think they know where he's going to be at, like, weigh-in day. I think they could find him if they wanted to.
Crazy, man. Like, he goes to Target to get a snack before the weigh-ins. Like, how the heck do you run it? Like, hey, turn around. I didn't steal nothing. No, you're going to jail. You ain't fighting. It's crazy, man.
That's wild. That's wild.
It's definitely a documentary type of story.
It needs its own documentary. I agree with you. When you know, in a fight like this, you're viewed widely as one of the top young guys in the 135 pound, in all of boxing, really. But do you get, and you and I have talked about this before, but do you get the sense that, like, because of your social media following and because of how you look, like, that people just don't believe you're on the Teofimo level or on the Devin Haney level or on the even Virgil Ortiz type of level. Do you get that sense?
Yeah, I do. And in the amateurs, I had a lot to prove, too. You know, they look at me. They always took me lightly. They always said, like, Ryan's just Ryan, you know? And then I would end up beating them. Then they would, like, have to focus on me. Like, oh, shit, like, this kid, like, he just beat Devin Haney. You know, he just beat this guy, he just beat that guy. So it's like my whole life I always got to prove myself to people because they look at me and they think of like, oh, he should be just like in a boy band or some shit. Like, and I'm like, the fuck? What are you guys talking about, man? I really fight. But it's like I'm honestly, people that are already set, I can't change their mind. And I'm learning little by little, like even in social media and like the public, I can't take what people are saying good about me or bad serious anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I got to just be focused on myself, getting better. And, you know, if I'm happy with my performance, I should just be happy. Mm-hmm. Who cares what anybody says? Like, just keep moving forward. I'm 21 years old. Like, I have a long time in my life to get better and better. Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, every fighter would take your social media following. Like, everyone in a heart. From guys that are 21 to 41, doesn't matter. They would take that with you there. Yeah,
they would. I mean, who wouldn't, right? Like, you could reach – I'm already up to, like, 3.7 million. I gained, like, 100,000 yesterday.
That's crazy. When did it take off? Like, when did you start to, like holy shit, I got
– I was 18 years old, and it was before my first time on TV. Like, I was going to fight on TV, and then, like, I did a video for a friend. It wasn't even my page. He told me, hey, can you hit the bag for me? I just want to see, like, something. So I was hitting it. And then he posts it, and then it goes viral on his page. Then it goes to Facebook, and, like, people are sending me messages. I'm getting followers on Instagram. I'm like, what's going on? Then a bunch of pages start posting me, and then that's when it started. And then, like, my fan base just started growing from guys to girls, and I was just like, what the heck is going on? And I just took advantage of it like anybody else would. And then my next fight was on TV. And I said to myself, you know, I'm going to end up on SportsCenter because it was on ESPN. And then that's exactly what I did. I knocked out the guy in 30 seconds, and they put myself on SportsCenter. So it just kept going and going, and it was crazy.
You've done well with Instagram. Like, I'm terrible at Instagram. I'm really good at Twitter, I think. I got, like, you know, 190,000, whatever. Yeah, yeah. But Instagram I suck at. I don't know how to get good at all.
Like, it's just certain things that you got to find what – your followers like and just post similar stuff to that and then build it from there. But Twitter is fun too, though. Twitter is hilarious. But on Twitter, people want you to be savage.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and I'm not that, like, I'm not that cutthroat to people. I'm more like I like to explain things, you know, but Twitter is for the savage.
Well, and they're savage right back. Like, I mean, yeah. I do basketball and boxing, and I get a lot of, like, Knicks fans, like, fuck you, Mannix. Like,
I know, for sure you have to go through some shit on Twitter.
There's some nastiness out there.
Twitter's nasty, man. They don't hold back on Twitter. And then they put weird shit on your picture, your video, and you're like, can you fucking delete that? Like, you can't, because you can't delete the comments.
Nope.
So it's like, what do I do with this? Like, this is some weird shit. Can Twitter hide it or something?
There's no recourse sometimes with that stuff. The social media stuff aside, you've shown the amateur ranks you can fight. You beat Haney, right, in the amateurs?
Beat Haney. I became number one in the nation. You know, Devin Haney left. I took his spot in the 135 because I beat everybody in the 132 division. So I was already on the top of my game, you know, right there. For some reason, he went pro. So we weren't going to fight anymore. So I cleaned out that division. And I was the number one guy. And I was going to go to Russia and do all that. But I was like, my family needs some money. I'm going to go pro. And I know what I could do. Like, I can knock out these guys quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm here.
What do you think of the way Haney's career has kind of jumped up? Because he's already getting that kind of pound for pound sort of talk out there.
You know what's crazy about Devin? Devin really did was like trying to start, like, he was building his social media before all, like, me, before anybody, you know. He wanted to, like, you know, start his YouTube channel, this, that. I just saw it, and I was like, man, I could do way better than that. And I did. And I was like, because I remember when I was in the, I was doing my first pro fight, and I had maybe, like, 8,000 followers. It was in Mexico. I had my first pro fight. And I looked at Devin Haney's profile. I was like, damn, how does he have 80,000 followers? How could you do that? And I asked my friend, how do you do that? And then some people like would say, oh, he bought it, this, that. But I was like, nah, I don't think so. He's promoting himself good.
Mm-hmm.
I said, let me try to do the Instagram thing. Because before I was doing like live broadcasting, and I was building my fan base there. And then when I tried that, I blew up crazy. And I know everybody was shocked. Like, damn, Ryan really took it to a whole nother level. Like, it was, I was right here, and then it just went.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, damn, that's crazy. But I just remember little stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I really looked at like, other things, and I was like, all right, how do I learn from there? Because I'm not like if I see somebody doing good, I'm like, how do I learn from that? Like, no matter who they are, I don't care if they're people, like, it's a rival or anything, like, even if it is like, oh, I like how he did that, like, all right, let me use that, let me do this. I'm not a very prideful person. I'm like, I like to learn. I like to, you know, all right, I could steal that from there. It's all in the mind, you know? Just like
everybody steals from everybody. If you're successful at anything, you've stolen something from someone.
Some type of, like, it's just more inspiration. Like, mm-hmm. like Kobe Bryant must have looked at Michael Jordan and was like, oh, damn, that move was crazy. I got to learn that. How does he get so good at that? Then you look at it, you start practicing, and then you're like, oh, that's why he did that so much. Because it works every time.
Even now, guys are stealing from Kobe. Like, yeah. They look at Kobe, the mid-range turnaround.
Kawhi
there.
Leonard, I feel like he does a lot of Kobe moves.
Same thing.
Know? Yeah.
Just get good at it. Yeah. Did you fight in the same – like, I remember Devin told me about the just absolute shitholes he was fighting in Mexico early on in his career. Were you
– I was in the same
boat.
Man. We had the – I mean, they switched opponents on me the day of. And the referee, and I was like, what is going on? Like, how does this even work? But, yeah, it was – Those days were rough. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna lie, those days were rough. Yeah.
What's the worst venue? I think Devin told me about a bar room he fought in once. Like, they put like a ring in the middle of the bar. Like, was there something like that for you?
Yeah, that's pretty much where I was at. It was like this little painted weird. It was painted a green color, and it was very small, and people were in like plastic chairs and shit, and they were just like. Like, it was so weird, like, because nobody really knew what was going on. They were just like, you're up next. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm up next. Put your gloves on now. I'm like, damn, you guys are ruthless here. Who am I fighting? That guy right there, he don't even look ready. He just like.
He's probably like 35, too. Yeah. Like,
he's just trying to feed his family. Mm-hmm. That's what, over there, like, they put on events just to feed their families, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not really about the boxing so much, but, you know, we're. You got to give respect. You go in the ring. Some of these guys, you know, high prospects, they're going in fighting these guys that don't want to really fight. They're just like, oh, shit, dude. Then they go down. It's cool to, like, get a feel for it, you know. So it's cool.
Do you go into that, though? Like, you're in Mexico. You might be fighting someone from Mexico. The judges are probably from Mexico. The referee probably lived down the street.
Yeah.
You're like, I got to finish this? Is that a mindset when you're in that?
Not really, because a lot of those times they already know the guy's going to lose. Mm. So they're like, we ain't going to rob this kid. They're just going to make the guy lose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty crazy.
I've been saying for a couple weeks or a couple months, really, like the one thing that excites me most in boxing is that you look at the young guys like you that are in and around the same weight class with Devin. Teofimo Lopez is going to fight for a title at December. Your Virgil Ortiz kind of lurking up there around 147 right now. Eventually, you guys are all going to clash, and it could lead to...
It's a new generation, and people should be excited. You know, there's no more really Manny Pacquiao. There's no more Floyd Mayweather. That thing is sailing away. And now you guys got to focus on us. We're the new wave.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in 5 years, it's going to be all us. You know, it's not going to be anybody else. You know, I feel like the top of the sport is going to be myself, Devin Haney, Gervonta Davis. Who else do I feel like is going to be up there? Maybe Shakur, Virgil.
Shakur is going to be fighting in your weight class soon, too. Like, he's already
You're going to be surprised. Shakur, what's his name? Carlos Barderas, too. Mm-hmm. You haven't heard a lot about him.
I remember him at the Olympics.
I don't know why he doesn't fight, but he's a good fighter.
He looked like he had kind of that De La Hoya stuff to him with the length and the jab and the...
He did have that style.
A little bit, yeah.
Deesh. But I don't know why he's been so MIA.
Mm. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
I don't know.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's just incredible. I mean, how confident do you feel like that you guys are going to have that kind of rivalry? Because the biggest problem with boxing is that we have to wait forever, it seems like.
You know what I've noticed? Watching, like Danny Garcia, Sean Porter, and all of them, they were the top in their division for the amateurs. Then they got to the pros, and they ended up being the top, you know, fighters in the 140 division. Same thing with me, Devin Haney, Shakur. We were the top in the amateurs. We're going to be in the top in the pros. That's just how it happens. If you were the best then, who else is going to come in out of nowhere and beat you? Unless you're like a Manny Pacquiao or some shit.
Mm.
You know, Manny Pacquiao came out of nowhere.
Yeah, he did. He was, when he came to L.A. to work with Freddie.
Rare breed.
Incredibly rare. Your fight here coming up with Duno, there's a lot of parallels to when Canelo fought on Floyd's undercard. And a lot of people knew who he was, but it was such an opportunity for him to fight on that big stage. Do you feel kind of the same way that, like, here's you kind of?
I think for me, the times have changed that, you know, the magnitude of the event, yes, is huge. Will it get me more new fans? I don't know.
Mm.
But I definitely know that it'll get me some respect the way I beat Duno on this type of event. You know, it's more eyes will be on it. But definitely, I don't know if it'll get me, like some crazy, you know, jumping exposure. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's more like the profile of it, of the event, and a chance to
the
you know, full house MGM Grand. They'll all be there for that.
I could always say that.
Your fans in Southern California were pissed you weren't there. Many that were upset in mid-September.
They were like, you owe us money, this, that. I'm like, I don't owe you shit. It was not my fault. You should have went there and watched the fights, man. They're like, I didn't even go. Mm. I left my 6 tickets on the floor. Mm. And I'm like, damn. My bad.
You got the last one to ask you about is the working with the Reynosos.
Yeah.
At first, I thought it was hilarious that you said you went into that. You didn't speak Spanish.
Yeah.
Like, how is the communication with you guys?
Surprisingly, Eddie does know a lot of English. Mm-hmm. He just shows me all the techniques I have to do.
Those guys know a little English. Canelo, he's got it.
I'll keep telling people, don't let him fool you.
No.
You talking shit to him in English, he's going to be like, shut the fuck up. He knows English. And so, you know, but it's good that they show me the techniques instead of telling me, because I have a better understanding. I'm looking at the stuff. I got to watch. I'm a visual learner. I'm not like, can't really tell me something. I'm not really, I have ADHD. Mm-hmm. So like, I be thinking this. I have a problem.
Has it been like, I mean, as you, which is what, your third fight with them? Third training camp?
Third fight? Like fifth training camp.
Fifth training camp. So do you feel a difference working with them in this camp? Do you feel like there's been progress from what they want you to do to where you are right now?
A big progress. You know, I'm more comfortable in the ring. I'm learning. I'm getting older, too. You know, I'm feeling stronger. Before, when I was like 18, 19.
Yeah, you're really old now, Ryan. I'm serious. Like,
but 20, like, 20, I feel like I'm growing into my body.
Right, man strength.
Yeah, man strength, because before I was like 19, 18, I would feel skinny in the ring. But I knew I had hard punches, but I would feel skinny. Like, I would, like, when I'm punching, it's not as strong. But now I'm like, douche, 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 breaking bones and shit.
I feel like this fight, you're going to, like, Juno's going to be there. Like, yeah. He's the kind of fighter that, you know, based on what I saw in his last fight, he's going to be there. He's going to be there to get hit, and he's going to be looking to hit.
Yeah. That's his problem. Mm. He's going to run into some shit. And I don't think he's – not my type of punches. Mm. Maybe Delgado, but not my type of punches. Mm-hmm. Don't be there to get hit by me. Mm-hmm. I know his style. He likes to go in and out. Mm. But he's not really, like, fast with his feet. So it's like he gets hit coming out. So my right hand will be there to meet him every single time.
Like it. Looking forward to it. Ryan, congratulations on all the success in the last couple of months. The new contract with Golden Boy, getting past all the nonsense. Yes. And it looks like your career's on track. And I'm looking forward to this fight and everything could happen. 2020, 2021. You got Bill Haney already, like, you know, screaming, like, from the rafters. Like, we want Ryan Garcia.
I like Bill Haney, though. He's an interesting guy.
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, but that's going to be a lot of fun.
You know
Ryan.
It's crazy, though.
Good. He
wanted to manage me. Bill Haney? Yeah.
How would that work?
I don't know. I was like, man, don't tell me that ever again. I don't know how that would ever work. But, yeah, he's a good guy. I like Bill.
You've had managers train fighters that have fought, but not one that also – or managed fighters. They don't want the trains.
That would be crazy. Like, imagine that.
I think that would be a tough call for him, like, working his son's corner and saying, like, here's how you beat Ryan. Then Ryan
hey, Ryan. You know, it's going to be a big fight.
You go from corner to corner before the fight. Like, good luck, man. You can take this guy.
Yeah.
Like, good luck, man. You can take this guy.
I know.
See that.
That's crazy. But, yeah, they're good people, though.
Yeah.
Devin Haney and Bill Haney is good people.
Well, looking forward to that, Teofimo, whatever happens down the line. Ryan, good luck on Saturday, man. Thanks for joining me.